presentation of Grace Church in Greenville, South Carolina. You're listening to our Courageously Generous series entitled Fear and Freedom. For more information, please visit our website at gracechurchsc.org.
All right. I want to say thanks to Mark and Beth Selby. I mean, how would you like to do that? Say, okay, here's been one of the biggest challenges of our life, and we're going to sit in front of a video camera, which is hard to do anyway, but we're going to roll that out and let them, we're not even going to see the final edit. We're just going to let them put it up on the screen. So we want to say thank you to them for being willing to give their lives to us in that way, make that sacrifice, and because that's the kind of open dialogue that we want, that we need, that we have to have if we're going to have genuine confession and repentance and find what God's heart is on this issue. So that's really, really important, and we're really grateful to them for that. Grab your Bibles and turn to Matthew 25. I am going to sit this morning because back in the war, I was carrying a guy to safety, and I hurt my back. And you always want something noble to say, not I was digging a hole or blowing off the driveway, and I hurt my back. So just be thankful I'm not lying down, right? Here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about what we might call, in complicated language, a theology of money. But when, you know, normally you would survey the whole Bible. What we're going to do is we're going to take a few of Jesus's words, and we're going to stack it up against what we talked about last week. That here's where we are, and we talked about some of that, what that looks like. And now we're going to say, here's where God is. This is what Jesus thinks about this issue in part, okay? And it'll help set the stage for next week and particularly the week after, right? But we're going to talk about that. And if you're new, and if you're not, I want to remind you of this. We're not asking the church to go get your resources, people in the church, and bring it to the church to help the church out. That's not what we're doing. We have a six-week series where we're rallying the resources of the church to be able to help individual folks in our body. That's what we're trying to do, okay? And it's an equipping time. And so last week, here's what we said in synopsis. We said something's wrong. Something's not right. Something's broken. Something's wrong. That we are thinking of our money, our material things, and the resources that we stow away in an account for security, we're elevating money, however it manifests itself in those ways, we're elevating that to a place of idolatry where we love it, we cast our affections on it, we trust in it for the future, trust in it for our happiness, and we serve it. We'll sacrifice anything for it. Right. And it moves to the level of idolatry. 1 Timothy 6:10 says this. Normally we're like, you hear it misquoted in a movie. They'll say, for money's the root of all evil. That's not what it says. It says the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, because that love will send this person in that direction, this woman in that direction, this family in that direction, and this family in that direction. So all kinds of evil can take place because of the love, the sacrificing of it, the trusting in it, the craving of it, the wanting of it. And he says this, and some people craving money have wandered from the true faith and pierced themselves with many sorrows. And the Apostle Paul had never seen the kind of mass wealth that we have as a culture. So you almost wonder, how does this ever even apply to another culture when you think about ours? It's so dynamic among who we are. It's a discipleship issue. It's something that we talked about because Jesus said, look, God's deeply concerned about your heart. Your heart's deeply connected to your treasure, your time, your money, whatever resources that you have. So if God cares about your heart and your heart's connected to this, well, now God cares about this. So treasure is a big deal. He speaks about money more than anything else other than judgment. In fact, your top from 2 down to 5, he talks about those topics, put them all together, less than he talks about money. He talks about money all the time because it's a heart issue, as Mark said. Not thinking about our culture, thinking about our church. We are $35 million in consumer debt. Approximately half of which would be on credit cards. $35 million in consumer debt, which means we are not enjoying life, means we're not enjoying money. Even if the moment you enjoyed it, you're not enjoying it now. There's conflict in our homes over money. We're not able to honor Christ with our money. So we got some challenge ahead of us. Jesus said, you're greedy. Said, I'm greedy. But Jesus hasn't looked closely because I can name 5 people who are greedier than I am. Which means I'm what? Not greedy. Jesus says, no, we're not going to use them as the standard. You and I need to talk, right? So that's what we got to deal with. And we're asking you to take a hard look. Let's take a hard look. We're offering some hope, which I want to talk about at the end. But we're having to be honest and say we're taking a hard look. All right, Matthew 25. We're going to look at a parable very quickly. And whenever you look at a parable, some major questions need to pop up. In the story, who's God? We want to identify that. Who is the good guy? And who's the bad guy? Now, the parables, generally you can get to who God is pretty quickly. But then you're watching the story unfold. And generally the way parables work is a good guy appears. And by the time you get to the end of the story, who you thought the good guy was is not the good guy. He's the bad guy. And we'll see this in a couple weeks when we look at Luke 16. The good guy is the bad guy. The bad guy is the good guy. And God's pleased with the one that you wouldn't think he's pleased with. All right, so all that's going on. And I hate to identify all those characters early. It didn't feel good to me, but we don't want to miss anything. So we're going to walk through it slowly, but also as quickly as we can. 14, here we go. Let's look for these major characters. Jesus said this, again, Matthew 25, verse 14. Again, the kingdom of heaven can be illustrated by the story of a man going on a long trip. All right? He called together his servants and entrusted his money to them while he was gone. So already we're going, okay, man who has resources, what's he going to do? He's going to go away on a long trip, so he's not going to be there. He's going to entrust it to his servants, and it's his money. Verse 15, he gave 5 bags of silver to one, 10 bags of silver to another, and 1 bag of silver to the last, dividing it in proportion to their abilities, and then he left on a trip. So we're already figuring, okay, the servants are probably going to be us. We got some different characters in there. Which one? I know which one I'd like to be. I'd like to be that first one, right? So we got that. The man going away on a long trip. Sound familiar? Sounds like God. It's his money. He's going to entrust it, is the word that's used. He's going to entrust it to some people who do not have those resources, and he's going to go away on a long trip, all right? So does it sound familiar? Yes. Man has resources, gives them out to his managers, he leaves, long trip. Here's the thing, sounds like a test. Feels that way already. I mean, already you kind of have this feeling. This feels like a test. So let's watch it unfold. Verse 16. The servant who received 5 bags of silver began to invest the money, and he earned 5 more, which by anybody's standards in any day, 100% is really good. The servant with 2 bags of silver also went to work, and he earned 2 more. Now notice this. Both have 100% return, but they didn't start with the same thing. So there was no equity in the beginning. It was 5 and 2. And now they both produced 100% return. There's still not equity. And you go, well, this is not even about equity. Right. You got it. Good. I mean, we're the ones who generally think in terms of equity. The man does not think in terms of equity. All right. Verse 18. But the servant who received 1 bag of silver dug a hole in the ground and hid the master's money. Most of you already read this. You kind of get a glimpse of where this is going. It's not going to be good for him. The question is, why is it not going to be good for him? That's the question. 19. After a long time, their master returned from his trip and called them to give account for how they used the money. So he's gone for a long time. Then he comes back and he asks for them to give an account. 20. The servant to whom he had entrusted the 5 bags of silver came forward with 5 more and said, Master, you gave me 5 bags of silver and I've earned 5 more. So anybody would feel good about this. And the master was full of praise. Now notice the kind of praise that he gives the man. Well done, my good and faithful servant. You have made me rich. That's not what it says, right? It just says, well done, my good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in handling a small amount. It's not going exactly where you think. I mean, you have made, because he hasn't made the man rich. Why? Because the man's already rich, right? So he hasn't done that for him. And that's not, thank you so much for making me wealthier. He says, no, you have been faithful in handling a small amount. Some of you are going, small amount? He's the one with 5. He's got 5. Another guy's got 2. Another guy's got 1. How's it a small amount? Not comparing to the others around him. That's not the standard. The comparison of the 5 is to the one who gave it. And compared to him, it's what? It's a small amount. And so the man gave this to him, and it's a small portion of what he has. So well done, my good and faithful servant. You've been faithful in handling this small amount. So now, here it goes, I will give you many more responsibilities. I knew it. It is a test. It's exactly what it was. This landowner, this owner of these resources, gave out a small amount of what he had to someone. And you're thinking this is an opportunity for him. But as it turns out, it's an opportunity for the guy who received it, who's managing it. He goes, you'll be faithful with this. We don't know that it could have been 100%, could have been something else. But you be faithful with this, and you're going to have more responsibilities. Well done, my good and faithful servant. You've been faithful in this small amount, so now I'll give you many more responsibilities. He goes, let's celebrate together. Verse 22, look how familiar this is. The servant who had received the 2 bags of silver came forward and said, Master, you gave me 2 bags of silver to invest, and I earned 2 more, which is significantly less than the first guy. So what is the master's response going to be here? The master said, well done, my good and faithful servant. He gets the same accommodation as the guy who now has 10. This guy has a lot less. He has 4. Okay. And he said, but he says the same thing. Well done, my good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in handling this small amount. So now I will give you many more responsibilities. What's coming to you is much greater than what you have had. Let's celebrate together. This is interesting, isn't it? I mean, it is a counterintuitive way of thinking. Because if it was one of us, we would say, look, that guy got 5, I got 2. Just let him handle it. I'll just take the 2. I'm going to work with this 2. And I mean, I don't really need to be that productive, because what difference does what I have matter since he has so much? Since the man has given him so much, what difference does it make what I do with my... That's over. Even if I double what I have, I cannot equal what he started out with. This whole situation's unfair. There's no way I can keep up with him. Even if I double what I have, I can't keep up with him. That would be our kind of thinking, right? In a competitive kind of environment. But the master says to both of them, you have been this, faithful. You have been faithful with what you have. Now, the interesting thing about this parable is it won't talk about the specifics of what faithfulness is. It won't give you a list of things to go out and do that God says, if you want to be faithful, here's the 5 things you have to do. Here's the 4 things they did. You need to go do those things. It doesn't deal with that. It's dealing with some higher principles. And the first one that jumps out here is the idea of faithfulness, is that you have been faithful. These were not your resources, but you handled them well. You were faithful with them. So now I'm going to give you more. So the opportunity was not actually for me. This opportunity was actually for you. Now look at the contrast in the next guy. Then the servant with 1 bag of silver came and said, Master, I knew you were a harsh man, harvesting crops you didn't plant and gathering crops you didn't cultivate. And I was, underline this, I was afraid I would lose your money. So I hid it in the earth. Look, here is your money back. I mean, that sounds a little bit endearing, doesn't it? I mean, it's yours. It's not even mine. I mean, I was afraid. I was afraid. I wouldn't want to lose what you have. And here's the thing. What difference does it make? Fred got 5, Jimmy got 2. I'm not trying to say you shafted me. I'm just saying, I mean, what difference does it make? You gave Jimmy over here 5. That's a mere fraction of what you have. And I got way less than that. I mean, does it even matter if I show up? And here's the thing, I don't want to lose what you have. So here it is back. Enjoy. It's yours again. Verse 26. Let's see if this answer is acceptable. But the master replied, you are a wicked and lazy servant. Okay, so Jesus, not a real friendly kind of message here. You're a wicked and lazy servant. And this is really interesting. If you knew that I harvested crops that I didn't plant and I gathered crops I didn't cultivate, why didn't you deposit my money in the bank? At least it could have gotten some interest on it. He says, you knew that I was a venture capitalist when we started. You knew that I don't actually do the work, that I make investments and you go do the work. You knew that when we started. And here's the master's point. Have you ever been arguing with someone and you're kind of in a debate and they're saying this, they make their point, you make your point, they make their point, you make your point, and then they make their point, and you're like, wait a minute, you're making my point. What you just said supports what I'm saying. Don't take my point. Stay on your side. Right? And the master says, you're making my point. Because he says in 24 or 25, he goes, 24, he goes, I knew you were a harsh man. I knew that you expected investment. And Jesus is saying, that's actually my point. You knew that this is what I do. The master replied in 26, you're wicked and lazy because you knew that I harvested crops that I didn't plant, that I gathered crops that I didn't cultivate. Why didn't you deposit my money in the bank? He goes, that's actually the point. You knew when I gave it to you, I expected you to manage it and bring me a return on what I gave you. But you didn't do that. And the reason he calls him wicked and lazy is because the instructions that were given were disregarded. See, it sounded sweet when he said, I didn't want to lose your money. But really what he's saying is, I didn't care what you told me to do. I do what I want to do. And the master said, here's the thing. Whether you made money with it or didn't make money with it, you disregarded my authority over my money. You pushed me to the side and you functioned as your own authority, making your own decisions. And whether you made, you know, a 0.5% or 50% or 100% return, whatever it was, you disregarded who I am and the fact that it was my money. And here's the thing, you took my money and you made it about you. You made your own independent authoritative decisions and you disregarded what I wanted for you. And see, this is a new way of thinking. Because we're talking about faithfulness, but faithfulness is predicated on this idea of ownership versus being a manager or a steward, which is the real tension, is that God says, Psalm 50, he goes, you bring me all these sacrifices. You do know that I don't eat the flesh of bulls. I don't drink that blood. There's nothing I can do with the sacrifices you bring me. I don't need anything. I own everything in the world. It's the message of Ecclesiastes, right? I mean, you might do the best job in the world hanging on to your stuff, but one day there's coming an estate sale where your children are going to get rid of your stuff, but you're not going to be here. So even if you can hang on your stuff till the very end, your stuff can't hang on to you. And God says, I had your stuff before you were here. I'll have your stuff after you're here. You're just a manager and a steward while you're here. I own the stuff. But that is exactly the opposite way that we tend to think. When I was 18 years old, I just graduated high school and my parents moved away from where I grew up and I got a call from my dad. He said, there's a hardware store in Westminster, South Carolina. A guy named Clark Wilmot had owned a number of businesses there and felt like this one wasn't making money, so he shut it down. He said, they're auctioning off a lot of their stuff and they have these gondolas, which is kind of a middle aisle with shelves on both sides where you can put stuff. And my dad had opened a store in Conway, South Carolina. He said, we need those gondolas. We need them in Conway. So would you, and I was staying at the beach, and he said, get the truck and drive up there and bid on them and win them and bring them back. And he goes, just try to keep it under $400. I was like, all right, that sounds great. So I drive, get up early, get to the auction, and two guys, they show the gondolas and all that. There's eight of them. It's really great. So they all look good to me. And so they start bidding. I let these two guys bid, start at $185. I thought, this is going to be great because that's way less than $400. I got plenty of room. They get up to whatever, 200 and something, high twos, and one guy drops out. So then I jump in. We go to like 325, and I'm the winner. So he's like, all right, you win them. I'm like, yes, I love this. I mean, who doesn't love an auction, right? So, and I beat you. I'm the winner. Okay, so who doesn't love that? All right, so take out checkbook, write the check, load them up, drive them back home, get home, call my dad, got everything, we're all good. He goes, how much was the check for? I was like, $2,700 and something, whatever. He goes, $2,700? It's like, yeah, that's what it was. There was eight of them. So I said, I got a good deal because it's like $325. So I saved like $75 a piece because you said don't go for $400. He goes, $400 for all of them. I was like, $400 for all of them? He goes, what have you done? I said, gone to work for someone who can't communicate. So you can imagine the tension, right? And let me just say, I mean, there's an incredible freedom in spending someone else's money. I mean, it is glorious, right? It is so much fun. I love it, right? But there is this unique accountability and spending someone else's money too, which is also glorious. And this is more akin to the way the master sees his resources with the servants. And this is a greater theology of money that Jesus rolls out for us than what we arrive at on our own. Because on my own, this is my stuff. And the logical conclusion of that is I may have to kill you to get my stuff. In one form or with my tongue or with the sword. Which what? Explains the world we live in, doesn't it? I may have to kill you with my tongue, with my sword to get my stuff. But I'm going to get my stuff. And then I'm going to do whatever I got to do to keep my stuff. Because I've got to, for the most noble purposes, pay for college and pay for retirement and keep up with them and have that and have this. And so we are owners by nature. And Jesus's theological perspective, God-centered perspective on money, is that we are not owners. We are managers of these resources, which brings a unique freedom that we are not used to and a unique sense of accountability that we are not counting on. All right? So that's why he calls him wicked and lazy, because he has moved outside of his authority. Verse 28, then he ordered, take the money from this servant, this one who didn't do well with the one, and give it to the one with 10 bags of silver. To those who use well what they are given, even more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But from those who do nothing, even what little they have will be taken away. You go, well, so we're taken away from the one who has very little and give to the one who has more. You go, I don't think that makes sense. Sure it does. It makes sense for me every Friday night when I have to grab a clipboard and I'm looking at 10 athletes and we're down to the last few seconds of the game and we have to call a play. And I'm looking around in this group of athletes and I'm going, out of these five starters, who will do what I say right now with 3 seconds left on the clock? We got to have a score and we got to have it right now. Here's the play that I'm drawing up on this board. And I want you to take the ball out and I want you to throw it to him. And then I want you to stand right there and you come off and you throw it to him. And then you turn and shoot. I need in that moment only those who are completely under my authority who will do exactly what they are told. Because we only have 3 seconds. And I don't have time for you to come up with a new play or think independently or get out there and start making your own decisions. I need you to manage the directions that are being given here. So you say, well, you always wind up making sure he gets the ball. Right. Because he always does what he's told. Well, he always gets to bring the ball in. Right. Because he always does what he's told. So to them that are under that kind of authority, more opportunity comes in their direction. Some of us are fighting an uphill battle because we are not under God's authority in this area. And so we are scraping and clawing, trying to figure it out when we're not under his authority. He's like, you're fighting an uphill battle because I'm taking away even the little bit that you have. And then he makes this huge statement. Now throw this useless servant into darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. It's a great point. We'll deal with it later. Let me give you 4 things, all right, that flow out of this, that build into an overarching idea. Just to review what we just saw in the parable. The first one is this. Is that the resources that are given to these folks are a test for the future. See, the person who's given the one, even if he quadruples it, it doesn't really make the master any wealthier. Because the master has so much. So it's not about the master. It's actually about him. It's about him getting an opportunity to have something greater and be a part of something greater. You're like, in this life or the next life? Yes. Right. Both. All that. So it is our resources are about a test for the future. Earth and heaven. The other one that we talked about was it's about faithfulness. Because the decisions are being made about these resources while the master's where? Away. So here it is in my home. So we sit around as a family, play a game, do this, watch TV, hang out, whatever. And I got this older family, these teenagers, and I got these younger kids right down here. Okay, so, and it's amazing. We're all hanging out. Everything's so peaceful and great. Just family. It's great, right? Then Vicky and I go out for dinner. And I come back and the older kids say, you know what? These two, they didn't really listen while y'all were gone. I mean, when we were here last night, they listened. No, and here's the attitude that they had. And this one had gotten into a temper thing, and this one wouldn't do what she was told, and da da da, and this is all this tension. It was harsh. And so when I bring them, I'm like, hey, this is what they tell me. They tell me these five things about you. Well, Dad, only three of those are true. Okay. All right. Well, then let's go with the three. Now, when I was with you the night before, you didn't act like that. Why are you acting like that now? I don't know. You want me to tell you? I'm ready. I got an answer for you. Is that when we were here, you were kind of covering up. But when Mom and Dad were gone, your true heart was revealed because we were what? Away. Feel this? The money, the resources that we have with him being away reveal the true nature of our hearts. So how I act, how I think, how I use my resources. And remember, we established last week that our money is closely connected to our hearts. So how I treat my money, my resources, how I spend that, how I save, how I give, how I do whatever. All of that reveals the true condition of my heart. And we're getting a clearer picture of that. Why? Because he's away. That's what faithfulness means. So a test for the future, faithfulness, our hearts are being revealed. The idea of being managers, that we're handling someone else's stuff, not our own stuff. And then this last one, accountability. Is that there's going to come a time when we're going to have to give an account for what we've done. And some of the explanations that we're going to give, we're not going to give them because we're just going to think about them and think, oh, that's ridiculous. I'm not going to say it out loud. But we function like there's not going to be a phone call from my dad. We function like we're not going to have to show, here's what I did. But if it's ours, you're right. We're not going to have to show what we did. But if it's not ours, we are going to have to show what we did. Right? So a test, faithfulness, managers, accountability, all build into this big idea. This is what I want you to walk away with. All right? This is the big idea. Is that because of this parable and some others like it in the teaching throughout Old Testament and New Testament, Psalm 50, is that everything's God's. Here's the thing. All financial decisions are actually spiritual decisions. All financial decisions are actually spiritual decisions. I had a buddy who planted a church in Tennessee. We were talking one time. And he was walking me through what they were doing with their family. He goes, Matt, we've just come to realize all financial decisions are actually spiritual decisions. Right? That's what this teaches. Because God is spirit, it's his, and we're having to make decisions with his stuff. So all my financial decisions are actually spiritual decisions. And here's the thing. Is that how so? Because when I have to make a decision about something with my resources, which are very precious to me, and I consider what the Word of God says, what the Spirit of God says, I seek counsel, I'm in community, about making those decisions, I honor God on the front end making those decisions. It's actually an act of worship. In other words, God, I'll buy this car if you think this is a good idea, if this honors you. That's an act of worship. I'm going to save for this. I'm going to give for this. I'm going to spend for this. And acknowledging God on the front end, saying this is what we think God wants. This is what how God's leading, how God's directing. We think he'd be honored. Then that spending, that moment of spending is actually an act of worship. And the whole spiritual universe sees that God is being honored. Even if no one on the earth knows that God is being honored in my heart because I'm considering him as we go to make this decision. So all financial decisions, spiritual decisions honors God. Here's the other part. Is that generally speaking, and I hardly ever say this. We hardly ever say this, all right? Because it's hardly ever true. But here's an example where it is true. Is that following a biblical framework for how we handle our resources actually makes your life better. Because the person who considers all financial decisions to be spiritual decisions doesn't generally wind up $30,000 in debt. $6,800 on credit cards for this, for that, for this, for that, because they thought about it ahead of time. They thought, God, would this honor you? And they arrive at a place where like, God, that's not going to honor you. That's just going to get me living. That's going to cost more than what I actually make. And that would not honor you. So actually following some of these principles actually makes life better. All right. So all financial decisions are spiritual decisions. Let me give you some examples just to stir the pot. Everybody's different and it's hard to come up with enough examples that cover everybody. But let's just look at some big ideas. It'd be easy to say that buying a house should be a spiritual decision because it's so much money. It takes so many resources. It's such a big deal of where, when, how much, all of that. That's an easy one to see. And think through all the, and I've shared with you part of my story. That's a challenge for us at one time. And then buying a car. Should I buy a new car? Should I buy a used car? If I buy this car, I free up an extra $2,000. I can put that money in the bank and save it for retirement, for college. I could give it away. I could use it for something else. I mean, when you spend this much here, you take away opportunities to spend over here. And so that financial decisions, spiritual decisions, because it could be, we're saying we should use everything for ministry. No, there's lots of other legitimate uses for money, but it's still a financial decision is still a spiritual decision. For a lot of us, how much to eat out versus how much we eat in, because generally eating out costs a lot more than eating in. How much am I going to save? How much are we going to give? It's interesting that we live in a culture, the wealthiest culture that's ever existed, the American culture, and the average non-Christian in America gives 2% of his income away because he can get a little tax break. 2%. The reason he only gives 2%, why? Because he's an owner. She owns it. Why would I part with my stuff? Because it's mine. It's mine. 2%. Thank goodness the church has not been sucked into that trap of thinking. I mean, we give, the average Christian in America gives 3% of their income. So we're smoking them, right? I mean, that 1% should be enough to get us into heaven right there. Okay? Because we're so much better. That's sarcasm. We're not getting to heaven for giving 1% more. I'll get an email this week. I didn't know I could go to heaven by only giving 1% more. Thank you. What am I thinking about debt? Whether it's consumer debt or mortgage debt or business debt, that's a spiritual decision. Am I thinking about retirement, college education? How much goes to ministry? And let me just break it down into what seems ridiculous. This is where I live. I mean, just being honest with you. For me, we moved into a house last year that was kind of a fixer-upper. So there's been lots of projects. I call it hell. But anyway, projects. Okay? So that means I'm headed to Lowe's. I need to buy a piece of equipment, a saw, whatever. It costs $50. Here's the question that runs through my head now. And I was mentored in this, so it's been a process. How many times am I going to use this? Am I going to use this once? Well, then I just need to borrow it. Why take my resources, which aren't my resources, and bind them up in something? You go, well, you make a good salary. You can afford it. I mean, right. That's not the issue. The issue is not how much I make or how good or bad my life is. The issue is what does it mean for me to be faithful? I'm only going to use this one time. Just borrow and break someone else's stuff, right? That's fine. Or you do what I do, borrow and keep it. That's a good way too, right? That's fine. Or I say, I'm just going to use this a handful of times. Or I'm going to go in, I'm going to find someone else who needs this. We're going to use it 3 times a year. Let's go in and buy it together. We'll share it 3 ways. Okay? And rather than me just going out and just buying it just because I can. And that's become the American mantra. Well, I can, so I will. Right? But that's not, for me, those are the kind of questions I have to ask because that's not being faithful. Right? And so there's no list for you or for me. We just got to think through some of those issues. So it's all financial decisions are spiritual decisions, or the counterpart is those decisions are cut out, separated, sectarian. You hear in the Middle East and Iraq, we have sectarian violence. So what that means is there's this religious group of 1,000 people, let's say 100 people think they're not radical enough, so they break out. So now they form their own group. They disregard the authority of the larger group. They pull away on their own. And then one day they go in and they ambush the larger group. And it's called, when it hits our news, sectarian violence. It's because this group has now cut themselves out and away and do not recognize the authority of the larger group. And so it's violence that is set apart, sectarian in nature. That's the kind of decisions that we make. God says the earth is mine, and the fullness thereof, I own everything. But what we're saying is, no, you're part of that. We pull away and grab this stuff for ourselves, and we own it ourselves, and so we make our own decisions. And so now they're not, every financial decision is not a spiritual decision. Our financial decisions are physical decisions. They're separate, they're secular, there are decisions that we make on our own, not recognizing his authority. This is what causes us to go into debt. Well, everybody else gets to go to vacation there. I don't understand why my three friends get to vacation there, but I don't get to vacation there. It's unfair. So I'm going to own that rather than trust God with that and deal with that in a different way. Or all my friends buy clothes there. So even though I can't really afford to buy clothes there, I'm going to buy clothes there anyway. A sectarian mindset says that I do not have to examine my life. When a spouse says you have three hobbies, maybe for this season in our life, you just need one. No, I deserve this. I own this. I'll make my own decisions. To be able to say, you know, I don't know that we got a budget in place. We have a framework. Most of it can't move. But there's these two or three pieces that can move that we might be out of whack. Let's examine those. And the sectarian mind says, I make my own decisions. I don't have to look at that. I'm not going to examine that. I'm not going to look at how much we spend on this. I'm not going to look at how much we spend on food. I'm not going to examine all that. I'm not going to talk about what I do with my credit card and what I don't do with my credit card. I'm not going to acknowledge Jesus' authority in this. All right, so here it is. It's a big challenge, right? You go, well, give me the list. We're not giving you a list. Okay? Here's what I'm telling you. For some of us, you're thinking, we've been living this way so long. I don't know what it would take for us to live a different way. And that's probably true. And there's some fear in all that. But let me just say this about the fear part. I've known tons of people swamped with debt. I've sat in a room with people in over $250,000 in debt, over $150,000 in debt, $120,000 in debt, $90,000 in debt, $80,000 in debt, $60,000 in debt, $6,800 in debt. I've sat with all of that. And I've watched a bunch of those folks make some painful but strategic decisions to change the way they live and to have a new future. And many of them are, this is over the last 15 years, many of them are experiencing a much different life now. Here's the thing. I've not had anybody come back to my office and say, you know, we did all this and we got out of this debt and now we're living like this. And I really miss the way it was. Not one person. Not had one person come back and say, I wish we hadn't made those hard decisions. I wish we hadn't put ourselves under this authority. I wish we hadn't made the drastic decisions sometimes that we had to make. Now that we're through all that and we're out and we're experiencing this kind of freedom, I kind of like to go back to some of that bondage. There was some joy to that. I've not heard anybody say that. No one has come in and said, I've been bound up in financial stress and chaos, and now I'm free of that. I look forward to going back someday. No one has said that. And so you just have to take my word for it. Because here's what we want to offer you. On January 24th and 31st, we want to offer you a free confidential assessment. Lasts about 15 minutes. It's where you can sit down with someone. It's free. It's confidential. You get to sit down with someone who knows their stuff, who can help you walk through where you are. It only lasts 15 minutes. We're not talking about 5 hours. 15 minutes and say, okay, here's where you are, and help you get some direction and say, here's probably the next step for you. So you can go, oh, okay, so that's what I should go do. Because you're going, well, I mean, where do I begin? Where do I start? What do I do? We just want to offer you some simple plans, some simple direction where you can say, oh, okay, so that's what I should do next. Because we're not going to eat this elephant all at one time. We're going to do it. That's kind of gross. But we're going to take this thing down one step at a time, one piece at a time, and move in the right direction. And we want to equip you and give you the opportunity to do that. You sign up on a guest card, say, I want to be a part of this assessment deal. Let me know in your name and number and all that so we can get in touch with you. You're going to have an opportunity to connect with your community group leader and some other leaders at church to be able to get some direction in the next few weeks. And what we're saying is your heart ready? Are you ready to say, some of you are going, I don't have any consumer debt. I don't do this on credit cards and I don't do that. And I don't have a second mortgage. I'm fine. Okay, then here's what I want to tell you. Then you're the rare exception. We need you on board. We need you helping. We need you to make a sacrifice and give your life away for some folks who are struggling around you. So we need you to jump in with us and get equipped to be able to help some other folks. So as a whole church, we have a role for everybody to play, whether you're struggling or whether you have it all together, because we want to help everybody get a personal plan that moves them into a better direction than where they are right now. Let me ask you these questions and we'll pray. For you to think about while we're worshiping and meditating, am I acting like I own my money or I'm a manager of my money? Okay. Am I living in a faithful way with what I've been entrusted? Notice we didn't hand out a list. Here's what I do. You got to do what I do. This is what she does. You got to do what she does. Is it you? Are you living in a faithful way with the resources that you have? And then is if you thought about this, is every financial decision, is it a spiritual decision for you? Or is it an autonomous decision that you make just physically based on what you think, what you feel? Let's pray together. Let's worship. And let's ask God to continue to show himself. Father, we ask that your spirit would give us a spirit of honesty and integrity with ourselves and with you. That in this area of life where so many of us struggle, and everybody struggles at different times in different ways, Father, that you'd reveal yourself, that we could recognize this is how I think about money and this is how you think about money. So there's a gap between us. So what does it look like for me to begin to move across that gap and move from where I am and the chaos that I've created and move to a place where you are? Where you could look at me one day and say, you have been faithful with the resources that I gave you. We ask that you'd speak and lead and guide and give us direction in Jesus' name.